Well, in that case, we are looking at these proposed budgets. We aren't approving them at this point, but we are approving the plan for the district's long-term care plans. And then we'll look at the actual budget for 2022, will be October and no November. So, draft budgets, anyone? I know Everett and I spent a lot of time yesterday with Nathan talking this through. So I guess I'll leave it to the other three of you if you have questions or things you'd like to add.
Yeah, I had a question about the EMS budget, and I wasn't sure if I saw somewhere in there whether it was discussed with the fire district. Just had that conversation about the version that includes the fire district running EMS. I think it would be very helpful just to make sure we have their input, and I wasn't sure if that had occurred.
I'll defer to Nathan on that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't remember what I put in the EMS budget on that. It wasn't really the focus of my attention. The EMS budget is 90% done. I had to do it in part because it connects to the PhD budget in a few key areas. But the short answer to your question is no. So I have reached out to the fire district a couple times, and we're just having trouble getting dates that work to connect and work out an interlocal agreement. That trying to get two attorneys and Chief Collins and myself in a meeting to talk things over. One of the challenges we actually are dealing with right now is a shortage of legal help. Attorneys are really busy right now. They just don't have time for anything. And you know, this vaccine mandate and a lot of the things related to that, you've seen articles in the news about firefighter EMTs and the disputes over it, and it's happening in hospitals as well. You know, all of this stuff is sucking up their time. And then there's the HB House Bill 1310, which, you know, everyone's trying to deal with. Really, our attorneys are all working insane hours, and they just don't have time to give. And it's had impacts. It's hard to get bargaining done. I have a number of legal things that have just taken longer than they should. And it's happening on the fire district side too, where, you know, we managed to get some dates to them, and you know, their attorney just didn't have any availability at all. So it's been really hard. And our legal counsel, not to give the wrong impression, you know, they really try hard and they come through for us. But a lot of times it's like 7:30 a.m. phone call from our legal counsel. Like, oh, I got a really busy day of bargaining, but I saw this email that looked urgent. And you know, so they really try, but it's been hard. So anyway, that's probably a longer answer than you were looking for. But
is there an expected end date to that sort of people being taken up with these things, just in that, like, isn't there a deadline for all of this vaccination?
October 18th is doomsday, yes. Not really, and not for us, but yes, that's...
But would we anticipate that by then things would settle down? I don't know. I suppose we can't.
Gosh, I hope so.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I do commend you, Nathan, because I know you had to do like these budget proposals with the idea of, like, you know, it's the public hospital district, you know, with the village, without the village, the EMS, you know, PhD without EMS, with EMS. So there's all these, like, we do really have coming in this election, really this large determination about what kind of public healthcare agency we are going to be. So it is a lot of work to create all of these budget proposals, not knowing that, you know, one or all of them are actually going to be true. So, a lot
yeah.
of work.
At the end of the day, I just had to make some assumptions. And I decided we're just going to assume status quo, not because I think that's likely or unlikely or because there's any probability one way or another, but simply because it's the status quo. I don't want to make assumptions about what the public will decide. Okay. So I designed the budget assuming EMS would be a part of the agent, part of our agency. Okay. And if that happens, it'll be fine, and it will need extra help, but it'll be fine. And so the PhD budget is designed, you know, assuming that, you know, we need to continue to have the Spring Street Square building, assuming that the hospital district is splitting my wages with EMS, assuming that we've not inherited a pile of cash from EMS, those sorts of things, just to make it easier. And it's pretty complicated trying to, this budget was a lot of work. Let's just leave it at that.
Well, it was definitely helpful to have the two different options in each budget. And I know that's challenging to have the status quo budget and then the major significant change budget right next to it. But it's definitely helpful to read it. I just want to make sure, you know, when I looked at the EMS one, I thought, okay, some of these numbers at the top could be different, right, based on the fire district administering it. And so having that conversation with them would be helpful for us, just so that we know what the taxpayers may decide for us to do, the voters here.
Yeah, and it depends a little on, you know, how you as a board want to structure this as well. And it depends a little on what they want. I mean, are we really just going to be doing administrative services? Are we doing a pass-through? I mean, what a combination? Are we going to start with administrative services and move towards a pass-through? These are questions and issues we need to talk through, and we will. So,
as part of that follow-up on an agreement to have a future conversation about what we might do.
Okay. Well, I mean, we can look forward to still discussing budgets at our October meeting and our November meeting, everyone. So don't forget, you still have time to ask questions and have comments. So
I would like to release this budget though tonight or tomorrow if possible. Specifically the 6-year budget plan for the Village of the Harbor and the long-term care expansion. I want to make sure that it meets the goals of the board. I've tried to outline those changes in narrative form as well as in the budget itself. But it should reflect to the extent possible what you as a board believe we're hoping to accomplish.
Yeah, I found the narrative form particularly helpful. I would think that the voters would find it really helpful. And it actually goes well with the actual spreadsheet too. I mean, it's pretty long and quite detailed. I think if people would read that, it would answer a lot of their questions. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a great attempt at trying to see the future 6 years out. Too bad it doesn't have stock tips in it too, but but really, really it is a very well considered attempt trying to look that far into the future.
It's hard to predict the cost of toilet paper in 2027, right? I mean, it's not terribly realistic, but we have, you know, there are consumer price indexes, there's inflation indexes. You can, you know, look at the most recent CPI, you know, you can do things to try to estimate, you know, how your expenses will change. For instance, on medical insurance, I just basically used a composite of the last few years' insurance increases. It's an extremely conservative budget. We assume no increases in Medicaid reimbursements, which is unlikely, but possible. We also assume that we'd get market rates on Medicaid. And, you know, based on experience, we believe we can get better rates. And on the expenditure side, we assumed, you know, not worst case scenario, but very pessimistic projections on cost increases. So we did the best we could. The main thing that it does, but Commissioner Clary is correct, of course, you know, there's no real way to say, you know, insurance is going to cost exactly, you know, 12% more in 4 years than it does right now. That's not, you can't really do that. I mean, but you can try to get in the ballpark. And what this budget plan does do is it clearly delineates how the project will unfold. I mean, you can see how expenditures and revenues change as you implement each part of the plan. And you can see how it all fits together, and you can see that it's feasible and that it's sustainable. And that's really key. And there's even a significant cushion to where if, you know, something terribly goes wrong, say insurance doubles in price, that, you know, we we have some room to be able to deal with that. It's not the end of the world. And it also shows that it's sort of progressive, right? You know, we're hoping to start with smaller numbers of home care workers. You work your way up. You got to learn the business, learn how it works, make sure that you're getting the reimbursement model that you're expecting. It's a very cautious, conservative, careful budget, and it shows that we can do this. So I was actually super excited. I mean, I don't love budgets and spreadsheets. I really don't. I don't mind it. But this one really excited me because, number one, I saw that our original proposal was really realistic and was actually not far off the mark. It was really in the ballpark of what's realistic. And it was just neat to see and visualize in my mind how this was going to take place. It's really a cool project. So.
I'd just like to chime in that I think we're very, very fortunate to have Evan and his expertise. Mm-hmm. Because he works, not only does he, you know, is he the licensed administrator for Village at the Harbor, but this is the world he works in as a consultant on the mainland with other assisted living facilities, and he is well acquainted with costs and, you know, the history of costs with assisted living facilities. So we're very fortunate. We've had the input from Robin Van Heining, who is really, I would say, an unparalleled expert in the world of long-term care, assisted living, memory care, home care. And so I think, you know, we're very fortunate to have those folks giving us input. And I thought, you know, I'm not a budget expert, never will I profess to be, but you know, I was really pleased to see the budget that you'd put together with the 6-year projections. As you say, there's so many unknowns just for any of us in the next 6 years, what's going to happen with our economy and so forth. But well done, Nathan. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, and I appreciate you giving the shout out to Evan. You know, he definitely helped. He helped me understand, you know, what his budget meant, you know, because they don't really, since they don't get benefits, it's not terribly important whether an employee is full-time or part-time. So trying to tease out, you know, exactly how many employees we're talking about on different line items and what the real staffing needs are and stuff. It was a great exercise in trying to understand how the whole system works too. I felt like I came out of it understanding how the system works a lot better than I did. And it's pretty exciting. Like Evan, you know, Evan's excited. I mean, not to speak for him, but I think this is probably pretty safe. I mean, it's really, really cool to be able to say, look, here's a budget and I can give these employees benefits now and retirement programs, PERS, right? I can give them wages. It's not hugely higher, but improved wages. And, you know, I can do all these things and have, you know, a budget that works. And we've been looking at addressing deferred maintenance needs like, you know, replacing their nurse assist system, you know, a call button you push if there's an issue that alerts the nurse. And we were looking at expanded nursing for the facility even really early on, which means more and better quality care for patients. And it's just, it's really neat. And it helps residents, people that are currently in the village, it helps the community. It just it's neat. So anyway, I don't mean to keep talking. I apologize. So the other questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Gail, did you have something to add? Okay. I just like seeing the budget just in that, you know, you can see how it's going to grow over time and that the employees that will be added, not just that we are budgeting to replace the carpet and things like that, but that, you know, we're expanding a workforce and it's nice to see that in a 6-year plan. So I really believe that the budget reflects our values as a board and as we try to represent what's in the best interest of our community.
Yeah, amazingly good work. I mean, it's great, all the narrative part of it and all that. I think it's people were asking for the budget. That's what they wanted. I want to know what we're spending on what, and that's the best you can do, right, with, like you said, future projections, unknown.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad you guys are happy.
I would also like to chime in that, you know, it's been calculated if you own a $500,000 home, piece of property on San Juan Island, your taxes would increase by about the value of an HBO Max subscription for a year. So, you know, when people say, how much are my taxes going to go up? How many of us have Amazon Prime? How many of us have Netflix, HBO, Disney Plus? I mean, they're all these things. And, you know, an HBO Max subscription is how much your taxes will increase with $500,000 value of your home. So that's a small price to pay. But I just want to add that.
Yeah, it's exciting. Very exciting. Well, Nathan, I am in approval of releasing these proposed budgets for people to see. I think it's important that the public can look at what we're planning for, as long as everyone else is in favor. I think we can move on. It looks like I'm getting some head nods. So
do we need to make a motion on that, or just, because I certainly support releasing
you
the budget.
You want us to make a motion, Nathan?
You know, I think I do, actually. I think that would be nice to release that, yeah.
Okay, I will entertain a motion to approve releasing the budget to the public.
I'll make a motion to release
and
the budget.
And I will second that.
Okay, great.
And I will second that motion, Gail.
Any discussion, anyone? Okay.
I move that we don't require superintendents to have to do this in the future. I just don't want to make sure it doesn't necessarily set that up. It seems like that's a bit could be restrictive, but I appreciate the desire to have the support of the board for releasing it.
I did put up a website. It's up. It's a document for me, and I want it to be a document from the board. I just want it to be something the board said, yes, we're ready to stand behind this, that we've looked at it, we're happy with it. That's really what I'm looking for here. But it is on the website as a draft.
Okay, great. Well, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Great work, Nathan. So much detail. Okay. So we had planned to discuss the sales agreement with the Village at the Harbor tonight, but we still need time on this. There are some details that need to be finalized, so we won't be taking any action today. What we do need to discuss is getting together in about 2 weeks' time, maybe October 7th or later, just to return to the sales agreement and have a special meeting to discuss it. Trish, you'll be back by then.
I will. I should be back by a week from Friday. So, yeah. And I like the idea of that particular, is that a Wednesday? I don't have my calendar in front of me.
Well, Wednesday is the 6th, and I'm not sure that that's enough time. I think, after the 7th, I could do the 13th. Or is that too close to our board meeting? You want something else?
Well, you know, ballots are going to be coming out. I just feel like we need to have an action before ballots come out. I don't know that that is important, but just a consideration, something to think about.
That's a good point.
And unless any of you have major concerns with it, we don't necessarily need all of you there.
Okay.
So, obviously better if you can. But that's.
To do it the 7th, does that give you enough time?
I think the 7th works if that works for the board. So does the 8th.
Okay. I'm good with either of those days.
I can't be there either of those days, but I'm sure you guys can swing it without me. I'll have time to review it ahead of time.
I can't imagine there's a huge difference between the 8th and the 11th or 12th, but
Well, to Tricia's point, I think it's important that we have it out to the public as soon as possible. So
who can make the 7th?
The 7th? I can make the 7th. I like the 7th. It's a Thursday.
Yes, it looks
like Thursday better than Friday.
Can you do the Thursday?
Say that again, Gail?
Yeah, I'm available.
Okay, great. It looks like you're on for the 7th then, Nathan.
5:30.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good.
We'll try to keep that short, commissioners, and I apologize for the delay.
Not your fault. It's important that we have it.
Nope.
So now, having resolved that, we get to move on to these resolutions that we have three ahead of us. The first one is just sort of a fairly routine resolution 21-554 address a surplus of the PhD regarding electronics and small and attractive assets and other general equipment. We seem to do this all the time.
Yeah, every month. It's a bit of a pain, but it's just appropriate. We actually cleaned up the inventory for the hospital district. You know, it should have only small and attractive assets and capital assets, $3,300 and up. But it had things like garbage cans and stuff on it. So we took off anything for which the original value is below $300. Okay. And we're surplusing a few things that we don't need anymore.
So yeah, the office is looking good. So
it's coming along. Yeah. Steve did a great job on this.
Does anyone have any commentary on this at all? No. Okay. I would entertain a motion to approve resolution number 21-554.
I move to approve resolution 20-554.
I second the motion.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. Thank you very much. Next, we have resolution 21-555. This is marine response and billing policy. So this is a little more complicated. We did discuss this some yesterday. This is really giving us some options for billing, just to bill for costs incurred and such. So, but I'll let Nathan handle the intro on this.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner. Okay. So here's the thing. We need to be setting service levels for marine calls, when we will and won't respond. And it needs to be a policy so that our response is not arbitrary. This is particularly important when we respond out of district. We have, so in EMS, we are certified by the state of Washington to respond and have a duty to respond within our primary response zone, which for our district is, what's the word, Coder Minas? I'm sure that Kyle would know this word, but it's the same exact area as our taxing district. Our secondary response area is all of the outer islands, which means that the Department of Health permits us to respond to those islands if we're able. But we should be making clear the conditions under which we'll respond and how we'll respond. And our crews and people deserve to know that as well. So that part of it's pretty straightforward. We will always respond within our primary response zone, provided it is safe to do so. If it is not safe to do so, then we won't. And then no one's expected to respond if it's not safe. Responding to the secondary response zone will be dependent upon staffing and crew availability. We are requiring compliance with the Dr. Corso's countywide protocols, which require four people including two of whom need to be medical personnel, and which permits response on either the Sentinel or the Guardian. It does permit response on other boats if necessary, but our standard and routine response for Outer Island responses should be the Sentinel or the Guardian with four people. And we did an event with the Sheriff's Office a couple weeks ago where we did some training on boater safety, and we're going to do more of that, make sure people are safe. And so this policy lays out some things related to that. The other part of this, though, is the billing. And this has always been problematic. So here's the thing about that. If you break your leg down the street from EMS, you're going to get a bill. If you break your leg on Obstruction Island, you will not. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not in our district. And the reason for that is because our boat is not a marine ambulance. So we can't bill for transport like you would an ambulance. The state of Washington allows actual cost billing, which means if you're responding to these kinds of calls, if you have a policy and a way to do that, you know, if this is an acceptable thing to do, which is to charge for actual costs incurred. But this is generally not reimbursable by insurance. So it could occasionally be problematic for people. And so you also have to decide, well, how much are you going to pursue this? Are you going to take people to collections? Or are you going to, you know, how much are you going to push the envelope on that? And so this policy tries to address all of those things. But it's not just an issue of our out-of-island response. It's also an issue of, you know, outer island, not just an issue of outside of our district. It's also an issue within district. You break a leg on Stewart Island, you're also not paying anything. And they're in our district. But people should be paying for service. And we have a fiduciary obligation to our taxpayers to do so. We've never gotten in trouble with an auditor over this, but we could. We're basically gifting this resource to people without charge. So that's not great. I mean, that's not really true for our in-district residents, but it's still not ideal.
So well, Nathan, wait a minute. Is it just the transport that's not billed for? The medical services are billed for?
Transport is the only thing you bill for in EMS.
Okay, so people that break their leg on a Stewart don't get a bill for services?
Yeah.
Unless we, wow, they doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I would say a big wow on that paper. Too. That's pretty shocking.
It's because there's no way to do it with it going through insurance. So if you bill them, they will have to pay out of pocket for the entire amount. And I think if we start billing people on Stewart, you know, you could get some rough contacts from people. We've created over years of having done this an expectation that we'll do this, and then they're not used to getting bills for it. I don't expect this will be very popular. But here's the thing. I think we should give people within our district a discount. We write off the cost of a standard transport on an ambulance. So we charge $13.50 for a ride on an ambulance here in town, and we would not charge an in-district resident for that. We would bill their insurance and then write off the rest. So our thought is, why don't we credit them that value and bill them the remainder? Typically, they would not have to pay much, maybe a few hundred dollars, depending on the situation. And of course, if someone is brought back to the island to go to Peace Health and transported from the marina, you can bill for that. But typically that's not what happens. People either get taken to the mainland or they're assisted on their way to airlift. And that's an issue too, because if we don't transport them, then airlift gets the payment, not us, right? But we still sent a boat and four crew members and paid for gas and brought in, you know, staff to station 31 here in Friday Harbor to cover and backfill, all of which is expensive, a few thousand dollars, really, if you add it all up. So anyway, this policy is not inconsequential. It will have consequences. And, you know, deciding to move forward with this, you will likely get some difficult phone calls and contacts. But it is a move towards financial accountability and fiduciary responsibility. Mm-hmm. And it's also a move towards really a pretty reasonable way to approach this. I don't think if you come from Yakima and you injure yourself on Jones Island, you don't really expect for it not to cost anything, right? I mean, most people would not expect that, but that's what happens. So we're trying to address that as well. So
I think most people would expect their insurance to pay for it. And they don't realize that when they come to an outer island like that, that they don't have any insurance coverage for any kind of service to get back to the mainland if something happened to them. That'd be good information.
And this policy is that we tell people if possible, but that's not always possible, right? You can't always communicate with the reporting party. They may not even be conscious. People may not really be in a position to understand what you're telling them. But, you know, this policy does say you should make an attempt to tell them this likely will not be covered by insurance. And there's an estimated cost. And I mean, it's not easy. But if you're in the Cascades and you need search and rescue, you gotta pay, right? I mean, it is done elsewhere. And you may not like it. You may be unhappy about it, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, this is about financial accountability and about, you know, we do, when we send our EMTs and our paramedics out on a boat, there's an inherent risk to that every time they go, especially if the weather is bad or whatever. But, you know, we also have to bring in more staff to cover them because they've gone either out of district or off island. So, I mean, this is about accountability financially. I think this is important.
And these prices are reasonable. As opposed to most insurance cases.
I would say it's very reasonable. I mean, we were in a situation as a family years ago when we did not have the MedFlight insurance and, you know, had a $23,000 bill via air ambulance. And, you know, there is a price to pay for living in this county or visiting this county. And I think people need to wake up to that if they aren't awake to it, that there is, you know, this is not just like being on the street in Seattle. This is a remote area. So, you know, I think a discount makes sense, but my goodness, you're sending a boat out. You're sending a crew out. You're taking that crew off our island. And to go to an area that isn't even in our tax paying district and not have any compensation doesn't make sense.
So does anyone else have any questions about this or concerns? I know that this obviously is potentially temporary in terms of our policies because, you know, as EMS potentially transfers over to the fire department, this won't be our concern and they'll have the license to bill. So,
yes, I would love to ask a question. Thank you. Yeah. Superintendent Butler, I did have a question about the actual cost fees. I saw that it looks like we would charge both for the ALS and BLS personnel who needed to travel to and to take care of this, take care of these responses or participate in the response, and also have to pay for the backfill of ALS and BLS. And I wasn't clear why they would have to pay for two sets of people instead of just say the ones who were serving on the call.
It's because both apply, right? I mean, if you're responding to Obstruction Island, you've got to pay the people that are coming out to treat you. But you've also got to pay for the fact that they got to bring on people so they can come treat you.
But shouldn't the people who have to come on because the other people left be the same people who would have been already at the station anyway?
No, I got to pay overtime. If I bring in a medic or an EMT when they're off duty, it's overtime.
Okay, and this applies to every time we have a call anywhere in the county or anywhere in our service district or beyond, because we're talking about beyond as well. We have to pay overtime for every call because somebody always has to backfill.
Not every time, but if it doesn't apply, then they won't get billed for it. So if I have two medics on duty and I send one out to go on the Marine response, then they won't be charged for backfill.
Okay.
And there isn't much of a distinction between ALS and BLS, correct? We don't.
It's almost double.
Yeah, the station. Well, we're charging. So, yes, we're charging more for station backfill for ALS, significantly more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think probably what you're thinking of is that when we bill people regularly, we don't charge more for ALS.
Right.
We send for an ambulance transport in Friday Harbor, you get a bill that's the same whether you received ALS care or BLS care.
Okay, that is what I'm thinking. Okay.
But we don't tend to triage. I mean, but we don't triage calls that way here in our district. If you break your leg down the street, our medics pretty much always go. We almost never just send EMTs. We don't really have enough crew to only send EMTs. So in that case, a medic is essentially an extra EMT unless they need pain management or, you know, an advanced level of care that a medic can provide. I mean, a BLS provider can give you Tylenol, right? But, you know, if you really have a bad fracture, you're going to want something stronger. And then that would be an ALS call. So, but I guess what I'm trying to say is outside of our district and on Marine responses, we're more careful about deploying BLS resources. We'll often just send BLS resources.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan, I just wanted to ask a question. You mentioned obstruction. I think you mentioned Obstruction Island, did you? And is that's out of our district? Is that correct?
Obstruction Island is out of our district, yeah.
So why wouldn't Orcas Island go to Obstruction Island? Do they not have a Marine response boat?
So that is a fair question. They do not have a boat, so they would be responding as we would with the sheriff's
okay.
department. They are closer, but
in yeah. a
sense, their ability to respond is probably less than ours. But the countywide protocols, Dr. Forsyth's protocols, do say that the closest responding agency, the closest EMS agency, should respond if able. And so it's reasonable to say, Orcas, why don't you go with the sheriff's department? And we will actually turn down missions if we have to. If I do not have enough people, then we won't go. And we would like to go, but if we do not have enough people for our island response, we will not go unless it's in district. We have to go. But for outside of our district, Outer Island response, we won't go unless we have enough crew. And in that case, you know, us or someone else would have to help too. Or maybe we put together crews from multiple islands. But we would be doing this under the auspices of the sheriff's department. And they would basically be coordinating this because dispatch is best placed to be able to mobilize resources from multiple places. But you're also looking at a significant decrease in the speed of response. If you're trying to bring people on from other islands, you've got to grab people.